Hello, I'm Janelle Williams. This is number 0168, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0168. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Leland Gregory, the author of Stupid Ancient History. He has learned that human nature really hasn't changed from time period to time period. Even graffiti goes back in time.
When Pompeii got destroyed by Mount Vesuvius and it got frozen in time for, thousands and thousands of years, when they unearthed it, they were surprised to find tons of graffiti like you would in any major city. And the graffiti was just the kind of same graffiti that you would find now. I mean, there's some like someone wrote on a pottery shop at the right of the door, wrote, "Lesbianus, you defecate and you write, hello, everyone." In a gladiator's barracks, someone had written on the wall, "On April 19th, I made bread."
Michelle Colston is the author of The Undiscovered Goddess. When did she find her undiscovered goddess?
I actually discovered mine while I was writing the book, if you can believe it. My husband says that I wrote my own self-help book. It's kind of funny, but in the process of writing the book and a lot of the experiences that our main character goes through are my own, and I had a lot of ahas while writing the book, and I think that a lot of my own self-discovery was just kind of digging down and finding the confidence to pursue getting the book out there and putting it in front of people.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. And did you ever hear the one about this edition of Book Banter and the book about 35 years in the comic strip called Make 'em Laugh? We'll find out the punchline later on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, the idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0168, was Janelle Williams, the HR administrator at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Janelle, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Well, let's get right to the stuff here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, I've got a couple of stories here where apparently some people are not sure about how to make the punishment fit the crime. Here's story number one. In September, Britain's Leeds Crown Court meted out punishment, and I'm doing air quotes when I say punishment here, to a 25-year-old man convicted of sneaking into the changing room of China's female swimmers during the Olympics. He was banned for 5 years from entering any female toilet or changing room. Now, wait a minute. Does that mean that the rest of the male population is allowed to enter a female toilet or changing room over the next 5 year period? I don't see how that punishment really fits the crime. But anyway, story number two. In September, the city of Simi Valley, California, adopted Halloween restrictions on the residents of its 119 registered sex offenders, forbidding enticing displays and requiring signs reading "No candy or treats at this residence." Now, shortly after that, several of the sex offenders sued the city for violating their rights, in that none of the offenders' convictions for molestations ever occurred during Halloween. Well, it's nice to know that sex offenders take off at least one night a year. Anyway, moving right along, in October, Britain's Gravesham Borough Council, weary of neighbors' complaints about the noise and smell from Roy Day's brood of 20 birds, ordered him to remove them and find them a new home. Now, Day, a member of the National Pigeon Racing Association, told reporters of the futility of the order. "They are homing pigeons," said a friend. "Wherever Day sends them, they will just fly straight back to him. He has never lost one." Wow. Now, as anybody knows, they don't have to be homing pigeons to find their way back to you. Those vermin in the sky just won't ever go away. I know the pigeon is one of God's creatures, but I don't know how a pair of them managed to book passage on Noah's Ark. We could have done without the pigeon. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, time now for the Redneck Chronicles. James Davis, age 73, has been ordered by the town of Stevenson, Alabama, to disinter his wife's body from his front yard and rebury her in a cemetery. The front yard is where she wanted to be, said Davis, and this way he can visit her every time he walks out the front door. Davis, who is challenging the order at the Court of Appeals, says he feels singled out since people in Stevenson, quote, have raised pigs in their yard and have horses in the road here and gravesites here all over the place. Well, this story is just disturbing on so many levels, so let's move along, shall we? Thanks to listener Ted Purdie for this next ditty. In October, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security wants to know how a male U.S. citizen boarded and flew aboard an Asiana Airlines flight from Seoul, South Korea, all the way to Los Angeles International Airport with a smoke grenade in his checked baggage. Okay, that part of the story I really don't have too much trouble with. It was in his checked baggage, and occasionally things can be missed. To me, here is where it gets weird. The man, whose journey originated in Japan, was arrested at LAX wearing a bulletproof vest and flame-retardant pants as he tried to check in for a domestic flight to Boston Logan International Airport. A thorough search of the man's checked luggage revealed billy clubs, various knives, a hatchet, body bags, a biohazard suit, handcuffs, and leg irons. Now, despite the arsenal the suspect brought into the U.S., a Japanese security source said security officials were not sure if the contents of the man's bag constituted illegal behavior. A magistrate in Los Angeles ordered the suspect held without bail after declaring that he might be a flight risk. You know, if this guy can get on a plane in Seoul, South Korea, wearing a bulletproof vest and flame-retardant pants without raising any red flags, you have to wonder what else is getting on flights in South Korea. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Leland Gregory, who has written such gems as S is for Stupid, is back with another book that chronicles human stupidity through time. As a matter of fact, his latest book goes way back. It's called Stupid Ancient History. And Leland joins us on the line from Nashville right now. Hi, Leland.
Hey, Peter. How you doing, brother?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
You know, Good to hear you.
You have to be probably the smartest and hippest person in the room, and the reason why I say that, you have written a lot of books so far under this idea of chronicling stupid things. How many books have you written now?
I finished my 30th book 2 weeks ago, and yes, I am the smartest person in the room, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm alone right now.
and the reason why I say that is because at some point you must have sat down and said, let me come up with an idea that I can write on where the possibilities are endless.
Right, exactly, because you know what? Stupid people breed. I'm never going to run out of information.
Okay, so what made you this time decide to go way back in time and come up with Stupid Ancient History?
Well, several years ago, I think it was in 2007 or 2008, I wrote a book called Stupid History. And it became a national bestseller and sold 160,000 copies, and because everyone likes history. And then I wrote one called Stupid American History in 2009, and it became the New York Times bestseller, and I thought, well, shoot, people like to hear about history, and, you know, I kind of delve into, you know, the more obscure, you know, irreverent tidbits of history, and then I thought, well, let's go way back, and so I put together this one called Stupid Ancient History, and actually it's one of the books I'm most proud of, because very well researched, very well documented, and it was incredibly hard to research a lot of this book. But funny stuff, incredibly crazy stuff that shows that people really haven't changed at all.
Now, some of the things that you list in your book that are considered stupid, while I have to agree that they are, couldn't some of them come under the headline of, well, someone's just thinking outside the box and they're being creative. Didn't work out, but they're being creative. For instance, didn't you mention in one of the things that took place in 300 BC to fight off Roman ships, some folks catapulted live snakes at them?
Live snakes, yeah, which is really brilliant if you think about it.
Yeah.
But then you have to wrangle live snakes on your ship to catapult them over to the other ship. So it's just the chance of something going wrong is multiplied. I guess snakes on a ship would have been Samuel Jackson's first movie had he been alive back then.
So I guess that plan didn't work out, did it?
Right, yeah. And if you say snakes on a ship really quickly, you'll probably mess up.
and you wouldn't want Samuel L. Jackson to swear, would you?
No. He's such a righteous dude.
Now, going back farther again, I understand the ancient Egyptian mummies were once used to be ground into powder for medicine?
Yeah, that was really an interesting thing, because when I first read that fact, I thought, oh, this is another mummy myth. You know, there's several mummy myths. One was that there were so many mummies that they used them as fuel to burn in boilers on trains. And it was a big myth that went around for years and years and years. And really what it turned out was that Mark Twain had written a kind of a jokey thing saying there's so many mummies they probably use them as firewood, and people started taking it out of context. So when I read the thing about that the mummies were ground up and used medicinally, I thought it was another myth, but I looked into it, and no, as a matter of fact, they used it for all sorts of ailments from the early 1800s up to like 1924.
So that really isn't, I mean, the subject of which they're using is really ancient, but that itself is not ancient history, is it?
No, but it uses ancient, it was kind of part of an ancient thing. Not everything in the book is completely ancient, but it relates back to it, like Caesar salads, right? One would assume that Caesar salads were named after Caesar, Augustus Caesar, and of course it wasn't. It was named after some Italian chef, and Caesarian section, a lot of people thought was named after Julius Caesar. And they went as far to say, well, he was probably born by Caesarian section, and that's how he got his name, Caesar. And of course, that's not true, because his mother lived for a long, long time. And back then, when you cut some woman's stomach wide open and took the baby out, she usually died, because they didn't have the medicine back then. And the other way to foil that premise that Caesar was born by Caesarian section and therefore got his name Caesar was that the name Caesar was a family name and had been used for hundreds of years before that.
Now, in putting together all of these books, and especially in putting together this one, Stupidity Over the Years, so is there anything anymore that really makes you shake your head?
You know, being born in the South, in the United States, I've kind of seen most stupid things happen just in my family. So very few things surprise me. You know what? Every now and then I will, stop and shake my head. What I thought was the coolest thing about Stupid Ancient History, my latest book, is that old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I always kind of assumed that things were much cleaner and people were more polite and politics was more regal and understood and there was a lot more civility back in ancient times, but actually it was just as bad as it is now. There were some really cool things when Pompeii got destroyed by Mount Vesuvius and it got frozen in time for, thousands and thousands of years. When they unearthed it, they were surprised to find tons of graffiti, like you would in any major city. And the graffiti was just the kind of same graffiti that you would find now. I mean, there's some someone wrote on a pottery shop or at the right of the door wrote, "Lesbianas, you defecate and you write, hello, everyone." In a gladiator's barracks, someone had written on the wall, "On April 19th, I made bread." There was one where he said, "Antiochus hung out here with his girlfriend." And it really brought that back to me, the fact that these were real people, like that classic thing that you see in graffiti, Leland was here. People were writing that in Pompeii.
You didn't.
And it's just not Leland. Yeah.
You didn't find
Leland Donis or whatever.
You didn't find Kilroy, did you?
No. Kilroyus Maximus was here. Yeah.
The one of the ones that caught my eye, you have to explain this one if you can, and that is in ancient Rome, before the advent of the Christian Bible, how would people right. promise to tell the truth? That's what I want to know.
Well, the term we use today is to testify, right?
Right.
And the root word of testify is actually testes, which is, well, I don't need to explain what that is. We're educated men. So before the Bible, men who were testifying under oath would actually hold their testicles to swear to their testicles and therefore to their children and their offspring that they were telling the truth. That's where we get the word testify, testimony, and all that.
I'm almost afraid to ask.
As you should be.
If women were allowed to testify.
That would be an ovarian promise, I guess. I think I just made up a term. I swear by my eggs that this is true. You know what? Probably not, because women weren't very well respected back then.
That is true. That is true. Now, since we've gone down that route, we've already talked about testicles, basically, we might as well bring up Caligula. But,
yes.
But not Caligula. For the reasons everyone thinks.
He's what? I'm sorry?
But not for the reasons everyone might think.
No, actually, Caligula, he's a very interesting character and incredibly smart and probably one of the most politically astute leaders ever. Definitely crazy and sexually perverted, but Caligula, actually, his name means little boots, because he used to follow his father around as a soldier. He was a small boy at the time, and of course his boots were always big. So, you know, the Roman word for little boots is Caligula. No one called him that to his face. You know, they called him emperor, you know, or Caesar to his face. But he was a very, very astute person, hated the Senate. The Senate hated him. He always showed out. And a lot of the things that he did were so extreme that people thought he was crazy, when in fact he was probably just trying to embarrass the Senate. By one thing, he had a big banquet, and he brought his horse in and said, "I'm going to make my horse a consulate," which was one of the highest ranks that all the senators wanted to be. And so, in history, they're saying, "Oh, he was so crazy that he wanted to, you know, to bestow upon his horse this title." And of course, he wasn't. He's not crazy. He was saying, "My horse is as smart as you guys are." You know, was what he was really saying. So he was an incredibly astute man. But was he a pervert? Oh yeah, he was.
So what you're saying then is you might have basically discovered the origin of partisan politics.
Yeah. It's so funny, because there's in Pompeii and Herculaneum, which were both, you know, destroyed during Mount Vesuvius in, it was what, AD 79 or something, there was political graffiti written on the walls that's not dissimilar to the political stuff that they're hashing out here in the United States between Obama and Romney. In fact, one of the pieces of graffiti set was quoted as, "The petty thieves ask you to elect Zetia as city magistrate." I just love that. It's like the petty thieves. The other one that says, "Marciaro and those who sleep a lot ask you to elect Vetia as city magistrate." And another one said, "All the late drinkers ask you to elect Marcus Cecilius Vetia as city magistrate."
Did anyone add a graffiti line saying that they approve of this message?
Then they just drew their picture of their You sure that's not Kilroy? No, that's not Kilroy.
The book is called Stupid Ancient History. It's written by Leland Gregory, one of many books that he comes out with. that covers and chronicles the history of stupidity, this time going way, way back. I'm almost afraid to ask what's next for you. I mean, what's left?
Well, I just finished my 30th book, which will be Stupid Sports, about stupidity in the world of sports, you know, baseball, basketball, cricket. I try to cover most of the sports. I don't know if there's a curling reference in there anywhere, but so I've got that one, and it looks like I'm doing I just signed a new contract to write a book, which is a sort of a parody of the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon called 50 Shades of Dumb, but minor true stories of people caught in the act or in flagrante delicto, as they say.
Leland, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being on the program once again.
Love talking to you, man. You're a good dude.
Leland Gregory, author of Stupid Ancient History. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0168, and you'll find links to Amazon.com where you can order his book directly for the Kindle.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of The Undiscovered Goddess. Plus, we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But first, more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which, of course, is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, earlier this year, the National Football League suspended some New Orleans Saints players and the head coach for having a reward system that paid players for purposely injuring opponents. Now, in September, coach Darren Crawford of the Tustin, California Pee Wee Red Cobras team was suspended when former players reported that the coach ran an apparently similar scheme among his 10 and 11-year-olds using a cash reward of up to $50 for the hit of the game, with last year's top prize going to a boy who left an opposing running back with a mild concussion. Again, 10 and 11-year-olds. At press time, the investigation is ongoing and no charges have been filed. Now, as an adult dealing with children, I find the word suspended in this case to be somewhat lenient. I don't think this guy should get a chance to coach children ever again. But that's just me. Anyway, moving right along, in Ohio's Akron City Hall, they had an evacuation after the discovery of a hollow aluminum rod with duct tape on both ends and the words "Natural Hunka Kaboom" written on it. After a police dog searched the building and found no explosives, workers were allowed back inside. The owner was eventually located. That would be Akron resident natural hunka kaboom, a regular attendee at City Hall Council meetings. It turns out that Mr. Kaboom had left his walking stick improvised from an extendable shower curtain rod at City Hall after attending a City Council meeting. Imagine the panic if his middle name had been Hussein instead of Hunka. Yeah. And simply running around without clothing is not illegal in San Francisco, and a city supervisor is vowing to do something about that, having grown tired of complaints about unclothed men lollying around the Castro District. The proposed legislation wouldn't affect street fairs, foot races, beachgoers, or the gay pride parade, but would affect parks, streets, and public transit. The supervisor, Scott Wiener, says it's the biggest complaint he gets from his constituents. Some people say, "This is not what we fought for," Wiener said. "Being able to expose your genitals at Castro and Market is not the goal of the LGBT civil rights movement." Mayor Ed Lee said he supports the proposed law. Well, of course, you realize the irony of this story is if Scott gets his proposed bill into law, it will probably be known as the Wiener Act. Yeah. Meanwhile, paramedic Jeff Gaglio responded to a house fire in Detroit, Michigan. An elderly victim was brought out of the house wearing only his underwear, so Gaglio gave him a blanket. 2 weeks later, the paramedic was brought up on charges for failing to follow department policy related to inventory accounting for an ambulance. This according to the Detroit Fire Commissioner Don Austin. What you say? Well, EMS Chief Gerald James explained that medics need to, quote, have prior approval before giving away department property, unquote. Where did the blanket come from? Well, it was one of many donated to the department by Firefighters Support Services, a charity to help the victims of fires. After a huge outcry when the story went public and hundreds of blankets were donated to the city's ambulance service from all over the country, the fire department announced that Gaglio would not, after all, be suspended. Yeah, that's a good move. You know, what should probably happen here is perhaps Gerald James and Don Austin need to make some sort of blanket apology. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, when Jeffrey M. McMullen, age 50, stepped up to a bank teller's window in northern Cambria, Pennsylvania, he handed her a note. It demanded exactly $1. The teller, who recognized McMullen as a regular customer, said she didn't understand the note and thought it was a joke. McMullen allegedly told her it was a robbery, so the teller suggested he try the next teller. McMullen went to the next window, but she also apparently recognized McMullen and also thought it was a joke. By then, McMullen was getting angry and stomped over to the new accounts desk, where he also announced a robbery. The employee there got $1 from her purse and handed it to him. He told her he would wait until police arrived, Police Sergeant Isaac Hassan reports, and he did just that. When he was arrested, without incident, police found two notes on him. One said, "Federal bank robbery, please hand over $1. And the other, "FBI custody, preferably Loretto, Pennsylvania, no press, seal all files." Apparently, he really, really, really wanted to go to jail. Okay, he really is an obliviate if he thinks writing "no press, seal all files" in a robbery note means that he can keep his name out of the news. So let me repeat his name for you right here, right now. Jeffrey M. McMullen. Jeffrey M. McMullen was almost our idiot of the day, but he's not. That comes later. So Jeffrey M. McMullen, you might go unnoticed for a little while longer. Oh, no. Wait a minute. If people Google Jeffrey M. McMullen, your dumbass harebrained scheme shows up all over the internet, and in some cases, with your mugshot. Sorry, Jeffrey M. McMullen. No anonymity for you. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. According to Michelle Colston, perhaps it's time to tell your self-conscious inner critic to just simply shut up. Michelle is the author of The Undiscovered Goddess, and she joins us on the line from Texas. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So
thanks for having me.
You feel that basically a lot of times people are their own worst enemies. They get in their way, don't they?
Oh, goodness, absolutely. Yes, I know I do.
So
yeah, I feel that a lot of times it's more comfortable for us, even though it causes us pain, I think it's more comfortable for us to just accept what our self-critic is telling us as opposed to just taking a chance. I think sometimes taking a chance or accepting that we're doing a good job or taking a new path, I think it's sometimes the unfamiliarity of that is just so uncomfortable. We would rather just listen to the self-critic and not do it.
So when did you discover your undiscovered goddess?
I actually discovered mine while I was writing the book, if you can believe it. My husband says that I wrote my own self-help book. It's kind of funny, but in the process of writing the book and a lot of the experiences that our main character goes through are my own, and I had a lot of ahas while writing the book, and I think that a lot of my own self-discovery was just kind of digging down and finding the confidence to pursue getting the book out there and putting it in front of people.
One of the things I've never understood is you walk to the checkout line at the supermarket and you see the ladies' magazines, Cosmo comes to mind, and the cover usually lists a whole bunch of things that women can supposedly do to make their lives better, which involve usually changing something about themselves. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, guys don't buy magazines that keep telling them there's something wrong with them.
Right. You know, Peter, that's actually a really, I'm glad that you brought that up because you're so right. I think that a lot of women feel that in order to get to a point where they can love themselves and they can accept themselves, that first they have to become something different or get to a place to where they are worthy of that love or that they are worthy of that acceptance. I think that, and I hate to be a cliche, but it really is. I think society really puts it out there that that we're not good as we are. That we need to, obviously either buy this product or change this or start this diet program or, do whatever to become something that fits this ideal. We have this idea in our minds of something that's, okay, that's acceptable. That's where I need to be in order to be happy. That's where I need to be in order for everyone else to accept me too. And you're right. I mean, it's all over just about every woman's magazine. Really kind of has that plastered everywhere.
Let's get right down to the basics, and that is, in your estimation, what is an inner goddess?
Wow, what a big question. I think that personally for me, I think and I feel that an inner goddess is really just a woman's own personal power and wisdom that we're all, kind of inherently one with. I think that a woman realizing, yes, I have this quirk and this quirk and this quote unquote imperfection, and all of these things are what make me perfect. I think that, a woman who can look herself in the mirror and say that genuinely, I feel has absolutely discovered her inner goddess. And I'm not saying that something like that is easy. It's definitely a practice, but that's probably how what I feel, that's what resonates with me whenever I think of an inner goddess.
You have the book, The Undiscovered Goddess, and you also have a weekly blog. Is this book that's something that grew out of your weekly blog?
Actually, no. The blog kind of came from the book. I wrote the book first, and then in order to kind of, I guess, I was inspired really to start the blog, because honestly, my editor, this amazing woman, was saying, this is the kind of stuff that, it's funny, but it's touching. So, maybe you could do something more often, weekly and or something like that, to where it could kind of stay fresh and new and people could read, more than just the book. So the blog actually came after the book.
So what kinds of things do you write about on the blog?
Honestly, that's just kind of day to day. Sometimes it's, I might be writing about where I am emotionally that day, or something funny that might be going on or some sort of duality, because I feel like I'm kind of a living mass of contradictions and dualities. And so sometimes I like to touch on that. So it really just kind of depends. It kind of goes day to day, but I pretty much just draw inspiration from whatever's going on with me that day.
And you try to keep a sense of humor about things too as well, right?
Oh gosh, absolutely. I think I really do believe that laughter is the best medicine. And I really love the idea of kind of laughing my way into fearlessness and kind of looking at all of the things that intimidate me or scare me. And if I can find something funny about it, then it gives me kind of a different entry point into kind of executing it, if you will.
I'm probably dating myself here, but it kind of reminds me growing up reading Irma Bombeck.
Yes.
And some,
absolutely.
Some
yeah.
of her books, like The Grass is Always Greener Over the Septic Tank, which is one of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah, but you know, it's really funny because I was not familiar with her work, and whenever I was writing The Undiscovered Goddess, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and he was like, "Oh my God, this is just like Irma Bombeck." And so, of course, at that point, I was compelled to go check her out. And yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, God, what a gem. You know, it was really kind of the what she was writing was pretty kind of unprecedented for that time. So I think she was really ahead of her time.
And what she does, and probably what you do, you probably had an aha moment when you found Bombeck, and I'm sure other women are finding the same thing. It's like reading your stuff, people see themselves and go, "Oh gosh, it's not just me."
Oh yes, yeah. You know, actually, I've had, you know, some of my best, just absolutely humbling moments. But I mean, women who are saying, "I feel like I was reading my own story," and I've had that same review from women who are not married, have no children, you know, work in software or IT, or you know, women who have nothing in common, so to speak, with the roles that this woman plays in this book. But still, yet they, you know, have so many women saying, "I feel like I was reading about me," and you know, it's so. I think that's one of the great things about the book is that it's not just about, you know, a wife and a mother, but it's about a woman. At the end of the day, it's about a woman who just doesn't know who she is. And I think that there are a lot of women out there who can relate with that.
What about the women in your life and their reaction to it? I don't know if you have sisters or if your mom's around. What are they saying about the book?
I have incredibly wonderful women in my life, my mother and my sister, and you know, great friends who have been extremely supportive. And honestly, you know, I don't know that I would have had the confidence to pursue putting this book out there without them, because I did have women in my life who were test readers for me and were very convincing that there are women out there who can relate with this, and they themselves could relate with it, and so or relate to it. And so, the women in my life were very supportive, and my mom was saying, "God, I wish that I would have had something like this to laugh about whenever I was a young mother, because a lot of times I felt like the things that crossed through my mind made me a bad mom." And that, you know, but yes, there are lots of women who feel like it's not okay to have these negative thoughts creep in. So, but yeah, that's, the women in my life have been very supportive.
What is next for you? And I bring that up because earlier I mentioned, of course, Irma Bombeck, and she had in addition to books, she had a column. Of course, there weren't any blogs back then. Would you like to have a column beyond your blog, be in newspapers, maybe follow-up books to this one?
Oh, I would love to have a column. I'm actually working on a series now, a completely different way of a completely different genre of writing, but I'm actually have recently gotten involved with an organization that's, you know, striving to abolish the modern day slavery, and so I'm going to get into grant writing with them, and I'm going to be getting into a women's studies program, and so I've got all the different, I'm kind of opening up all different avenues for my craft and to be able to hone my skills. And so yes, I'm very much so looking forward to what's going to happen next, either, you know, with my career, literary as being a novelist, but also being an activist as well.
Well, the book, the current book, is called The Undiscovered Goddess, and people can check out your website at theundiscoveredgoddess.com, where they can also find the link to your blog that we touched on earlier. Michelle, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter. I appreciate it.
Michelle Colston, author of The Undiscovered Goddess. You can check out her website at theundiscoveredgoddess.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0168, and you'll find links to Michelle's site. You'll also find links to Amazon.com, where you can order her book directly for the Kindle. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I recently received an email note from a lady who was bitten by a dog while she was jogging. She said that after it happened, she told the local Humane Society and then got a tetanus shot. The bite left a scar on her leg, but fortunately, the wound healed very well, and she decided just to let the matter end there. Then, she got a letter from a lawyer who lived far away, but who had somehow heard about the dog bite. He said that if she sued, lawsuits like hers often settled for thousands of dollars. But she didn't want to sue, and threw the letter away. Weeks later, she got another letter from the lawyer, again urging her to sue, and that's when she contacted me. Now, let's be fair, this nice lady probably could have sued, but she didn't like how the lawyer was fishing for a lawsuit, and she knew that there were other ways of dealing with the situation out of court. Now, she wants to help others learn about alternatives to lawsuits too, and I think that's a great idea. To learn more, visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And from the tip of his toes all the way up to his funny bone, here, once again, is Stuart Nauman.
Thank you. Thank everybody. Thank you. Hey, I tell you. I like it, doing a little bit of Rodney Dangerfield. But Peter, on this edition of Book Banter, let's go create a little scenario here.
Okay.
You're a working or aspiring stand-up comic. It's New York City. It's about, 1979, 1980, somewhere around there. Now, there are three major comedy clubs you can go to if you really want to apply your trade in order to make it into the world of stand-up comedy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So one of them would be The Improv.
Right. Bud Friedman's Place.
Yes, that's right. The other one would be Catch a Rising Star.
Right.
And the third one, which was also a revered shrine, is the comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since Richie Tienkin opened the comic strip on June 1st, 1976, it became the training ground for some of the best stand-up comics that have graced comedy clubs across North America, not to mention festivals, TV shows, and movies. Now, how's this for illustrious alumni from the comic strip? We've got Jerry Seinfeld, Ray Romano, Chris Rock, Billy Crystal, Lewis Black, Colin Quinn, Larry Miller, Gilbert Gottfried, and Lisa Lampanelli. And believe me, that's just scratching the surface here. Now, but for those who have performed at the comic strip and have made the club their training ground and launching pad to the world of stand-up comedy, it was more than just a club. It was a place to hang out, to develop and polish your routines, and most of all, to create a close, familial atmosphere amongst your fellow comics who had the same goal as you, but with very little or no vapid competition amongst each other. In fact, being part of the comics fraternity was, in a way, a very treasured membership. Now, Richie teamed up with New York-based comedy writer, performer, and aficionado Jeffrey Gurian, who writes a regular internet comedy column called Comedy Matters, and is host of his Comedy Matters internet TV channel, to write an intimate history of the comic strip and its impact on the world of contemporary stand-up comedy called Make 'Em Laugh.
Jeffrey Gurian. Where do I know that name? Jeffrey Gurian.
Oh, you've probably seen him at a lot of Just for Laughs festivals. You can't mistake him. You could point him out in a crowd. He's got a very distinctive hairdo.
Just look for the hair. That's right. You can see Jeffrey Gurian coming. You know, it doesn't make a difference where you are. Jeffrey Gurian could be front view, side view, back view, aerial view. You know it's Jeffrey Gurian.
It could be satellite view,
Exactly.
And, Jeffrey Gurian's, he's there because of that distinctive hairdo. I mean, you could see 10 miles away.
All right.
But what a great guy under that hairdo, let me tell you.
A great guy.
Oh, yeah. And he knows his comedy. And you know what? This book that he wrote with Richie Tienkin, it contains interviews with 30 prominent comics who have built their careers on the comic strip stage. They divided the book into two generations, the older kids like Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Ray Romano, Billy Crystal, etc., and the younger kids, which is, you know, Lisa Lampanelli, Jeffrey Ross, Jim Gaffigan, Adam Ferreira, to name a few. Now, Tiangan and Gurian get the comics who are profiled in the book to open up to them about how they started the strip, how they developed their trademark routines, the rigors and struggles of making it as a comic in the highly charged competitive atmosphere that is New York City, and a lot of favorite memories of being part of the comic strip brotherhood. But when you read the book, you get several consensus of opinion of what it was like to work at the strip. First of all, there was the lottery method of auditioning, waiting for hours to get a spot to perform on stage, even if it was after midnight on a weeknight, with a few people in the audience, getting quote-unquote passed and asked for your day and time availabilities, which is all was known as avails, being honored or intimidated by the critiques of your performance by the late Lucien Hold, who was the club's manager, or if you had the good fortune to be hooked into one of his lengthy conversations, where you'd be lucky to get one word in edgewise. And when he wasn't managing the early career of Eddie Murphy, how Richie Tienken was a caring, nurturing individual to every comic who passed through the strip stores, which gained him revered rock star status amongst them. But Make Him Laugh is a very enjoyable, insightful book about a pioneering comedy club that has become a virtual comedy institution. And although many comedy clubs across North America have come and gone in 35 years since the comic strip first opened its doors, the respect it has gained and how important and relevant it is to this day to a new generation of stand-up comics will ensure its doors will stay open for many more years.
Mm. Excellent. The book is?
It's called Make Him Laugh, and it's by Richie Tienken and Jeffrey Gurian. It's published by Sky Horse Publishing, and it's $28.95.
And you know, it's when you consider that we're talking about humor, it doesn't compare to the down in the mouth daytime job that Jeffrey Gurian has.
Oh yeah, because he's a dentist by trade.
Exactly.
In fact, he's when he meets with a lot of other comics for Comedy Matters, and it's written in the book, he has that label. He's always referred to as the comedy dentist.
Yes, sir. Jeffrey Gurian, DDS.
Well, he could use laughter instead of Novocaine for if he wants to extract a tooth.
And if people want to read more about comedy clubs, what do you suggest, perhaps?
Well, I prefer not about a club, but about a revered show business place, the Sands Hotel.
Ah.
In Vegas. A great book called Rat Pack Confidential by Sean Levy, which gives you an inside look at, you know, what it was like to be a member of the Rat Pack, hang at the Sands Hotel circa 1959, 1960. Also, Levy did a great book by Jerry Lewis called King of Comedy. And about comedy, about comedians who, you know, earned their stripes on the comedy club circuit. May I recommend a book by Bill Kinison about his late brother Sam Kinison called Brother Sam, and it's a terrific biography, and it just shows how he, you know, worked his way up in the comedy clubs, not only in New York, but also in his native Texas, you know, and also, you know, a lot of the smaller clubs as well. Here's a person, very controversial comic, but, you know, made his way up through the comedy club circuit.
Excellent. And how can people, if they want to, for kicks and giggles, find you?
Well... if you want a good chuckle or a good read that will probably give you a chuckle or maybe you know, make you think a little bit, you can turn to the West End Times on paper. Or if you don't have paper, you can see me online at www.westendtimes.ca. And, you know, and away we go.
Are you available on Papyrus Reeves?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and also stone tablets, too.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome, Peter, and let's have a chuckle or two.
Okay, Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost out of racetrack before we get to the end of this edition of the Stuff File program. Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but a few Stuff File news stories to get through first. Police in Lancaster, England, received a number of reports that a man was walking through Chorley armed with a samurai sword. This according to Chief Superintendent Stuart Williams. A description of the offender was circulated to officers and patrols were sent out to look for the man. One of the officers who arrived in Chorley believed he had located the offender. Now, despite asking the man to stop, he failed to do so and the officer discharged his taser. The man wasn't carrying a sword, it was a white cane. Colin Farmer, age 61, who is blind, couldn't tell that the officer was yelling at him. It felt like I was grabbing an electricity pylon, Farmer said, after being tased. He thought he was being robbed and has retained a solicitor to sue the police. A drunk man with a sword was captured elsewhere. Superintendent Williams added that the officer's taser has been taken away from him. Yes, perhaps not only should they take away his taser, hopefully they'll replace it with a white cane of his own. And when Barbara Ann Bearden, age 49, pulled into a gas station in Hingham, Massachusetts, there was something odd about her car. It was on fire. Shocked onlookers rushed in and doused the flames with a fire extinguisher while others called for firefighters. Police retraced her path and say that she had hit a guardrail. They found pieces of her car at the impact site and then just kept going. Two of her tires had blown out and Bearden drove for half a mile on the bare rims, which may have sparked the fire. Bearden admitted to drinking two glasses of wine at 1 p.m., but the incident happened at 10 in the morning. She was arrested and charged with drunken driving, driving to endanger, leaving the scene of a crash causing property damage, and failure to stay in the marked lanes. Those must have been some awfully big glasses of wine, considering how long it took her to drink them. And James Gangham, age 43, was sitting in his recliner watching a TV movie. Apparently he saw something in the movie he didn't like. "That's not how it's done," he said, picking up a pistol. He held a gun to his head and pulled the trigger. Click. He pulled it again. Click. He pulled it a third time and shot himself in the head. He was declared dead at the scene and police ruled it an accident. Really? And that's apparently how it's done. Everyone's a television critic. Four Pekin, Illinois community high school students were suspended after being caught ingesting unmarked white tablets. The students claim they were only eating energy mints, but the school said it would test the tablets and sent them home anyway. Then the test results came back. The unmarked white tablets were, wait for it, energy mints. But despite parental objections and media attention, District Superintendent Paula Davis stood by the students' two-day suspensions. Pekin Community High School approaches consumption of mood-altering substances very seriously, she said in a statement, and it has a mission to keep both illegal and legal drugs and substances out of the school. The mints have 102 milligrams of caffeine. A cup of coffee can have up to 200 milligrams of caffeine. Speaking of which, Ms. Davis, here's a cup. We're testing you for caffeine and anything else that might explain you. Yeah. I almost wanted to make her the idiot of the day, but I did not. But our next story includes the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the idiot of the day.
A teller at a bank in Syracuse, New York, was confronted by a robber who demanded $20,000. She simply told him no. The robber again stated his demand for $20,000, so she handed over a wad of cash and the man fled. As per standard procedure after a robbery, the bank locked the doors. Once the robber looked at his haul, he was upset. The teller hadn't given him the full $20,000 he wanted. He returned to the bank and was still trying to get in through the locked door when police arrived and arrested him without incident. Arthur Bundridge, age 28, was charged with fourth-degree grand larceny, which is an e-felony, which is the lowest level of felony in New York and punishable by not more than 4 years in prison. Now, why would a bank robber try to go back into the bank he just robbed and try to get more money when any person with half a brain would know that the cops would be called the second they initially left the bank? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0168. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0168. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.